Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 30th of September, recording at 9:54 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. The Asian stock markets were mostly firmer, a good day by China and some of the ASEAN markets. Japan was a notable exception, down 2%. And I think not least due to the yen's strength. And let's see, we also had the Topix Banks Index at a new low for the year. European stock markets seesawed and then mostly closed with small losses. Wall Street roared in with strong gains at the beginning of the day, but then gave it all up and closed with modest losses. Elsewhere, long-dated government bond prices mostly eased. The U.S. dollar was a little bit weaker, but paired those gains. I think basically unchanged, mixed performance. The precious metals, precious metals sold off a little bit. Nothing significant. Gold is last at 308.40. They sold off and then rallied back up. Sorry, I've got a little bit of a frog in the throat. I'm going to take a drink of water. Okay, apologies for that. So, precious metals. Choppy day. For instance, gold, which is currently trading at 1308.64, has been as high as 1316 and as low as 1295. And elsewhere, we saw pretty choppy action overall. I think not unrelated to the end of the quarter. Grains and beans sold off sharply, then recovered most of that decline. Sugar, that's interesting because sugar had the first downward dynamic in a number of months. And industrial metals were mostly a little bit easier. Crude oil was very strong, touched $80 briefly, currently $79.86. Okay. So what's going on here overall? Well, I mentioned the end of the quarter, being September 30th, and I think that's an excuse to nail down a few profits, which people have almost certainly achieved if they've been long stock markets and long commodities. Now, we also had in the choppy activity, we had a couple of small key day reversals. Well, if you look very, very closely, you'll see one on the NASDAQ 100 index, which has been the ace performer on Wall Street recently. And also a key on the Dow. I don't think it's too serious. I don't think it's serious at all, actually. I don't want to be complacent about it, but after all, a key is a key. But yesterday's action was very, very quiet, narrow range, in other words. But what's been going on here, and I've been mentioning it every day, as is Owen, for over a week, is that we're in a consolidation phase. We had a short-term overbought condition that was more than enough reason for the rallies to lose upside momentum. And to get some choppy activity and what I've described as a possibility of a small reaction. I don't think we'll get thumped. We'll see, of course. One of the reasons why I don't think markets will get thumped is because the rally was so impressive that it claimed some converts. And to see a little bit of backing and filling, as they call it, consolidation, in other words, would be a healthy thing for these markets overall, because we do have some overextended trends. Those are mostly in the markets that have been romping really since June. But thereafter, I think we're going to see higher levels, but not in the near term. Don't be surprised if we get a little bit more choppy activity in stock markets for another what week or two. That wouldn't surprise me, but I do think we'll then see stronger gains as we work our way further into October. Now, long-dated government bonds have had a pretty good rally here recently. They have been stronger because of the quantitative easing that had been announced by both the Fed and also the Bank of England. They didn't guarantee that they were going to go out and do it, as I recall, but they said that they were certainly ready and willing to do it if it proved necessary. And so therefore we had the bond markets rallying. That's bond prices, that is. I don't think there's much in it on the upside. I've been saying this for a while now, but and I'll continue to say it because there's no value in the yields unless you feel that the U.S. really is going to see a depression. And I don't see much evidence of that overall, although if you're unemployed and they're trying to foreclose on your house, then you're experiencing a personal depression, and unfortunately, that's the case for a few too many Americans and people in other countries where property bubbles have burst as well. But the main thing, and I've got a terrific report that I posted, which shows 20 slides of economic data, and it's very well put together. This graph, it's unlabeled, which is always a little bit of a concern, but I suspect it's come from a hedge fund sales desk, and it was passed on to me by an institutional subscriber. But have a look at it, because what it does is it compares five recessions and shows what happened following the nadir of the recession, which statistically was June 2009. And so there's other recessions. I mean, it's taking it following the nadir at 1975, 1982, 1991, and 2001, in addition to the current period. And you know, if you just look at that, and are not listening to the more emotional financial press and more emotional commentators who've been talking so much gloom and doom, with the exception of housing, which looks diabolical, it's not that easy to differentiate this recession in terms of the economic activity depicted from the one that we actually saw in 2001 and 1991. Now, those three recessions really are considerably worse than what we saw in the halcyon days, or the recoveries were considerably slower than the halcyon days of 1975 and 1982, not surprisingly, until you get to the company data. And the individual company data is absolutely outstanding. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that confirms a very important point that I've been making, and that is it's not about the economy, it's about individual stocks and U.S. multinational companies. Those that weren't destroyed by their pensions and other entitlements programs, as the automobile companies were, and those that didn't self-destruct, like the banking sector, are doing surprisingly well, led by technology companies. And these firms, first they went into survival mode, so they cut overheads, so they're running a lean ship. They're benefiting enormously from the very soft US dollar. And they are ideally positioned, they're well represented in terms of selling into the really booming regions of the global economy, of which there are many. So that contention, and we've seen it in the corporate profits, but you need to see the studies, the graph studies of the corporate profits and some of the other data. It is mighty impressive. Okay, what else to mention here? Commodity markets. There's a high correlation there with stock markets, and we're clearly seeing some profit taking overall. I think, again, we'll see prices for a number of these commodities, volatile though they are, higher come the end of the year. And the one to watch, though, that's the most important, well, there are two that are categories that are very important. The most important one is crude oil. And having moved back up to 80, that's just getting into the upper side of its trading range for the last many months. And at some point, crude oil is going to move sharply higher, and that'll be a problem when it does occur. It hasn't happened yet, but things can change quickly in these commodity markets. And in all honesty, I don't know whether it's going to be, well, I don't think it'll be next week, but I would not be so sure regarding the end of the year. Hopefully not. Hopefully it takes a good deal longer, and it might, because natural gas prices are quite weak. The subsidized renewables are competing for market share, so they're cutting into the demand for crude oil a little bit. And there has been a fair amount of crude oil around, and coal's also cheap. But again, this is a lull in what is an overall secular bull market for industrial commodities, and that includes energy. So at some point, we are going to see considerably higher energy prices. If that move is slow, in other words, if the prices rise slowly, then it won't have a shock effect. If anything went seriously wrong with production, prices could rise very quickly. I'm talking about some major storm damage to oil facilities, that type of thing. Again, hopefully it won't happen, but it's a risk. Now, the other area which I've been mentioning has been in food prices, particularly the staple grain and bean complex. And prices are well underpinned with base formations, or at least oats, corn, soybeans, and wheat have those underlying base formations. And those patterns can support considerably higher prices. Now, maybe that doesn't happen because we get a little less commodity speculation, and that's certainly a factor in what takes place in terms of these prices. And perhaps the weather just improves enough so that people become more optimistic about the next crop cycle, and that weighs on prices. But a combination of food price inflation and energy cost inflation would be hard on bonds and hard on stock markets. I think it would be worse for the bond markets. But that's something that's going to happen at some point out there. Again, I'm not, don't mean to be gloomy about this. I'm actually quite optimistic at the moment and have been, as you know. Get beyond this consolidation for another week or two, maybe three at most, I think we'll have strong stock markets again. And I've described it as a bit of a sweet spot, but sweet spots are ephemeral, and they seldom last beyond a few months or a year or two at most, and then something changes. So I'm just trying to think ahead here, and that's how I actually see it. I do think we will get higher food prices based on the information that I've seen, and we will also, at some point, as I've already said, see some energy price inflation. What about currencies? Somebody asked me today if they should short the dollar. Well, the dollar has been awfully weak recently. Arguably, it's a little bit oversold in the short term. I certainly don't think we're going to see a strong dollar anytime soon, but it could rebound a little bit. The currency that's most out of line is the Japanese yen, 83.48 against the US dollar. When will they intervene? Given the weakness of the Japanese stock market, the concern of industrialists indicated in the expectations following the Tanken report that was released yesterday, it's a very serious situation. If I were running the Bank of Japan and had a free hand, I'd come in and intervene again, push the market up, and then I would announce that I was prepared to intervene as much as was required to push the dollar yen rate back up into the mid 90s. Say it's currently 83.47. And if that signal was made loudly and clearly, the market would back it, and probably no further intervention would be required. Will they do that? Who knows? And on that note, I'll just say that this is my last broadcast until the second half of October. It's because I'm off to the US and leaving you entirely in Owen's very capable hands. Good luck. I'll look forward to resuming my part in the commentary when I get back. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.